I despise your killing and raping. You're despicable.
Are you my judge?
It's just, you should be punished. I'm going to chop off your arm. So are you ready?
Hope you're ready. Welcome everybody back to Asian Cinema Fusion. I'm your host, Paul Martinez. It's been a while since I've been with you. A lot of stuff, personal, going on, as well as another podcast I do. Really took up my time in August. But I'm not going to bore you with all those details. We're going to talk today about four more films. These were films I saw at the New York Asian Film Festival that took place earlier this summer. You haven't heard me go on enough about it. That's an incredible time there. We're actually going to, at the end of the show, hear a little bit from one of the guys, Mr. DeGrom, Rufus DeGrom, that I spoke to at the festival. It's about a 2.5 minute clip. That's a couple of questions he answered for us. And we're going to play that at the end of the show. So stay tuned for that. And like I always say, if you are ever in the New York area around the July 4th time, you should definitely look to come down and check out something at the New York Asian Film Festival. It runs for a little over 2 weeks. If I'm trying to remember correctly, I think it's 17 days. And also, there's other film festivals are right around the same time that are going on. Of course, the granddaddy is the New York Asian. But the other festival is also good. There's a few other ones going on. There's also a Korean Film Festival coming up, I believe in November. So there's New York is always a great place to catch great Asian cinema on the big screen. So like I always say, and if you're ever planning, if you're talking to me and you're planning a trip down to New York, and when you're down here, you're interested to learn if there are anything going on, always drop me a message on my Twitter page, or you can just drop me a comment right here. Wherever you're listening to this, there'll be a comment section, and ask me what's going on, and I will tell you. My Twitter handle, by the way, is PaulieLex. And yeah, you could drop me a line there, or like I said, you could just drop a line in the comments and let me know that you're planning to come out to New York, and I'll be able to let you know. If you give me the dates to be down here, what there's, you know, able to see on the big screen. It seems like lately, like there's almost every week, there's something somewhere that you can catch. And that's just like really fun stuff for fans of the genre as we are. So, but let's get into the four films that we're going to view today. These were four very, very, very interesting films, and I'm going to start with, and that's an incredible one. This is The Royal Tailor. This came out in 2014 out of Korea. It was directed by Lee Won-suk, a relatively new director. He directed a film called Men's Manual, which is the English title. Or the Korean title was much more elaborate. And then off the top of my head, I can't remember it. I just kind of remember it as Men's Manual. So, but he's mostly was known as a comedy director, but, and while there is a lot of, you know, moments of levity in this film, it's not really a straight out comedy. It's more of a drama, more of a historical drama. Very interesting subject matter. It stars Han Suk-kyu as the Royal Tailor, Jo Dong-suk. You might know him from The Berlin File or Shiri. Go Soo as Lee Gong-jin. I know him from Haunters. He was in The Front Line. I haven't seen The Front Line, but I know he was in that. And then Park Shin-hye, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, as the Queen. Now, she's a very famous TV actress, but she is huge. I mean, huge in Korea. And she's just like starting to break into movies now. She's just a really budding star. And Yoo Young-suk plays the King. You might know him from Whistleblower. It's where I know him from. He was also in A Werewolf Boy, which I have not seen. And the tagline for this, I would say, is the clothes made the man. Now, what is this about? A young poor boy grows up to become the royal tailor. He has served tirelessly for many years. Now he's about to gain nobility for all his hard work. But a young upstart shows up and begins to steal his thunder with his radical designs. Now, as I said, of course, I screened this at the New York Asia Film Festival at the awesome School of Visual Arts Theater. Wow, it is really quite impressive. If you ever get a chance to watch anything at the School of Visual Arts, I really suggest you do so. It's incredible screens, like a high def giant screen, really beautiful. The colors, everything. It was a very, very, very beautiful production. It was just fitting for this incredible film. Now, the director was there, and I heard from him that this film was not well received in Korea. Well, it has been received well everywhere else. This is a masterpiece of filmmaking, from the lavish costumes, which cost in excess of $1 million to create. The flawless performances from everyone. I laughed. I cried. Yes, I cried. The story is so perfect in its simplistic nature. Not saying the script wasn't well written or deep, because it was, but it was riveting without trying to be too cool for the room, if you know what I mean. Like, he told a story that it was easy to follow. That's what it does. Like I said, not a simple story, but you could follow it. And sometimes I feel, I talked about this with another film on our last show, sometimes I feel these directors are more concerned with trying to show everybody how brilliant they are instead of making a film that people enjoy. That is not the case in this film at all. There's no real action in this, yet the tension can be cut with a knife. Real serious drama, putting you on the edge of your seat in suspense. At the same time, there's a softness shown. These characters are flawed, which makes them real. You can relate to all of their desires as well as their actions, even if you don't agree. And I always found that it's just brilliant writing. The comedic aspect, which is mostly in the first half of the film, is done quite well, mostly coming from the interactions between Go-su and the great Ma Dong-suk, who was just stupendous in a supporting role. But the story of the film is the incredible imagery. Even I, a guy, was wowed by these beautiful dresses. The vibrant colors and designs were stunning. When the credits roll, you may find yourself wiping your eyes, as a few of us in the theater did. I'm not going to give anything away, but you feel. This movie makes you feel something, and anytime that happens, it's a very special moment. This is a great film that really needs to be seen by anybody within the sound of my voice. I give this a 9 out of 10. Again, I can't tell you enough. I would put this in the top 5 films I've ever seen. That's an incredible, incredible film. The Royal Tailor. Find it. Watch it. You'll thank me later. Our next film, Coin Locker Girl. Also from 2014 and also from Korea. This was directed by Han Jun-hee. This was his debut feature film. I was talking about this on our last show. Like, there's so many debut directors that was shown at the New York Asia Film Festival. It's not always the case, but that just goes to show you, like, the future of Asia cinema is in good hands with all these great films being made. This film stars Kim Hae-soo as Ma, or Mother. You would probably know her from Tales of the High Rollers, The Thieves. She was in The Face Reader. She's an incredible actress. Kim Go-yeon as Il-young. She was in a movie called A Muse and Monster. You would probably recognize her from Monster. If you haven't seen that, go find Monster. Good film. And Park Bo-gum as Park Suk-hung, who I know from A Hard Day, which is another very underrated film. And my tagline for this is, Mother Knows Best. Now, what is this about? A baby is left in a coin locker. She is found by beggars and raised with them until one day she is taken and sold to a crime lord in Chinatown named the Mother. He proves her usefulness in the organization and becomes favored by Mother. But when she has second thoughts about a mission, she earns Mother's wrath. This is pretty by-the-books revenge flick. Some resemblance to A Bittersweet Life. Actually, a lot of resemblance to A Bittersweet Life, I felt. This film surpasses it in some ways, but comes up short in others. The story is rather cookie cutter, and there are a couple of small holes, but really nothing egregious. Where this film excels is in the performances of the two leads. An absolutely stunning performance from Kim Hyesoo, which is not very surprising. She's just a great actress. But this was such a different type of role from her. The visuals of her face looking haggard, yet still proud of grace, were very striking. I took that a lot, these visuals of her. Really stood with me after the film was over. The action was decent, not on the level of the earlier mentioned The Bittersweet Life, but what we have is at times intense. There was a scene that was a bit shocking to the audience. The deaths are brutal, which makes it more real. I think this is a really good first effort from the director, and we'll definitely watch whatever he does next. The ending was rather predictable and a bit flat, but that does not ruin what was a fun watch. I give this a solid 7 out of 10, and it is, I think, a film that you should try to see when you have time. Now, we don't have an old school entry this week, because at the time, I didn't see any old school films at the festival. So we're going to go with another new film. I promise to have an old school film on our next show, though. Now, our next film is Brotherhood of Blades. Once again, 2014. This will be the best of 2014. But this was from Hong Kong. This is directed by Liu Yang. This is his first major film. I think he did some short stories and stuff before this. It's starring Chang Chen as Shen Lian, who you would know from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Silk, Red Cliff. He's one of those guys that you may not know his name, but when you see his face, you're like, oh yeah, that guy. Liu Shixi as Zhao Meng Tong. He was in Badges of Fury, which I embarrassingly still have not watched. And Wang Qianyuan as Liu Jianxing. He was in a film called The Crossing, which is on my to-watch list. And my tagline for this one, all they have are their swords and each other. So what is this about? Well, three underpaid and underappreciated members of the Imperial Assassins of the Secret Police are sent to kill a rich eunuch by a paranoid king. But at what point is duty to superiors who have no respect for them become less than doing for themselves? This was the only Wuxia entry at the New York Asian Film Festival this year, but it was a great entry. While watching this on the big screen at the aforementioned School of Visual Arts, this had a big budget film feel. You know, we always see these royal assassin types as the villains, some nameless guys that are there to be killed by the protagonist. Here we learn that they're just regular men trying to make a life for themselves. This is a welcome different take on this. This is really a film focusing on, I guess in a way, what we would see as the bad guys in other films. So I like things that are different. This was different. The action is exciting, graceful, yet violent. As you can expect, it's here where the film does the best. Martial art fans will be pleased, I think. The action was okay in spots, better in others. I felt Wang Qianyuan was especially good as a secondary lead. Cheng Chen was pretty good as well. I was not, however, moved by the acting chops shown both by Li Shixi and Ni Yuan, who both seem to keep the same expression throughout the film. What makes this film is the bond between the three brothers. A real throwback to the days of Chang Che or Saw Brothers Studios, an aspect that first drew me to the genre of you know, martial art films. Really, you know, the Chang Chang films are what got me in. That whole brotherhood and, you know, the honor and all that. That's what really always hooked me. And it's just something that it's, you know, so honorable and full of machismo that I found so attractive. And this is just a great movie for fans of the martial arts genre. It's a great martial art film, maybe not a great drama, but as a martial arts film, it's really good. I scored a 7.5 out of 10. And now for a wild card section, I'm going to review two films, and I'll explain why. It is Solomon's Perjury 1 and 2. So, let's start with Solomon's Perjury Part 1, Suspicion. Came out in 2015 out of Japan, directed by Izuru Naoshima, who has previously done Rebirth and Cape Nostalgia. Unfortunately, I've not seen either film. Also starring Ryoko Fujino as Fujino, Mizuki Itagaki as Kambara, Anna Ishii as Yuri. She was known as in Nobody's Perfect. Thought she was very good in this film. And Hiroya Shimizu as Uri, who was in Strayer's Chronicle, now, which we reviewed last show. Now, most of these actors that I just talked about are very young, teenage. Some of them, this is their first role. And once I explain the story, you'll understand why. And the tagline for this film is, "Does truth equal justice?" So what is this one about? Well, it's Christmas morning, and two students on their way to school, which, by the way, school is open in Japan on Christmas. They do not get the day off like here in America. So as they're on their way to school, they find the body of one of their classmates in the snow. The police and the school ruled it a suicide, but was it? More and more questions arise, as does tensions. Until there is only one solution. The students must find out the truth themselves by holding a trial. Now, this is not a trial in court. This is just a trial by them. They want to get to the truth. They want answers, and they're going to hold their own trial. So, now, this is an outstanding concept. Told exquisitely. The director gives us just enough information to make us think what's happening, but not enough to really be sure. So many questions to be answered, but how does it all lead to a young boy's death? This really kept me on the edge of my seat. With so many young actors, most with little or no acting experience, it's a challenging undertaking. And yes, there are some scenes where it's not perfect. But overall, very well done. Young Ryoko Fujimo in her debut film was the highlight. Her facial expressions were sometimes almost too sullen, but still a fine debut. I thought Anna Ishii really excelled here. I was not as pleased with Mizuki Itagaki's constant puppy dog expressions. Still, I'm not going to be overly picky and pick apart the cast of basically all newcomers. Of course, the biggest obstacle is explaining how a school would ever allow such a trial to take place on their grounds. But by cleverly giving the students an edge, thanks to a puzzling, overzealous teacher, plus the backing of another, helped pave that problem. Still, honestly, there's no way this ever really could happen. But we suspend belief here to enjoy this very good film. And I give it a 6.5 out of 10. Now, Solomon's Perjury Part 2, Judgment. The cast and the director remain the same here. This part is a bit less character-driven and more focused on the actual trial proceedings. There are a few heart-wrenching parts, but not overly so. In fact, I felt it lacked maybe enough emotion, considering. All of our questions are answered to satisfaction, thankfully. But I guess I expected a bit more, maybe an unexpected turn. While plausible, the final reveal was not shocking, which after nearly 2.5 hours, I was really hoping for. Hiroya Shimizu carries the MVP for his performance in part 2 as the accused bully. There are some cute scenes, but overall it's a sad film, at times depressing, but still, overall an enjoyable conclusion to the story. I give part 2 a 6 out of 10, slightly less than the first part. So, you know, that's our show. I know it seems kind of quick. We just kind of ran through those films kind of quickly. But I just want to know everyone know that I apologize for the lateness of this show. And I hope to return to our regular format on our next one, which will not be as long as a break. I've already have 3 films reviewed for it. I have to review one more, and then we're going to bring that one out right away. So, actually, there's probably going to be something for the Japan Cuts Festival, maybe, that I will watch that'll go on that show. You know, of course, I'll give a report on anything I've seen. I can tell you right now, we're probably going to talk about Jackie Chan's Dragon Blade on the next show, which I have seen. So that's giving you a little, coming up next type of deal. But until that time, I want to thank you all for listening and thank you for sticking by me. This show will come out a bit more regular, I promise. And thanks for listening. But before we say bye-bye, as I usually do at this point, I do want to play a little 2-minute and 30-second interview with Rufus, just so that you guys, just a couple questions asked concerning the New York Asian Film Festival. A little look inside, if you will. So listen to that. And after that, it'll be bye-bye. Take care and see you guys soon.
Okay. I'm here with Rufus Durand. Yeah. I wanted to make sure I pronounced that right. One of the men of Subway Cinema and one of the programmers for the New York Asian Film Festival. And I guess I wanted to ask the main question, which probably everybody wants to know, is how do you select the films for the festival?
We watch about a million movies, and it's a weird alchemy of personal choice, knowing our audience, and just what we can get and what works with, you know, it's also political. It's like what works with distributors and with the guests that we can get, and so it's a weird math that has been, I've learned over the last 5 years doing this.
When you are picking a film, does the chance of you getting somebody from the film to appear play a role in picking that film?
Sometimes it depends, but we really pick films for the film's sake and not because of any guests that we get. The guests are, of course, an added bonus, but really it's more about the quality of the films or what connects with us personally.
Okay, I guess I would ask, how did you, you're not one of the founding members of Subway Cinema. How did you get involved?
So I was actually, I was on a panel on Korean cinema with Goran Topalovich, who's the executive director of the festival, and we became friends, and my specialty is Korean cinema. And, 2010, 2011, around then, in that transition year, he called me up and said, hey, we have an opening, do you want to join? And I said, hell yes, I've been going to the New York Asian Film Festival forever, so yes, of course.
Right.
That's when I started.
Have you been attending the festival from the beginning, the very first year?
No, because I moved to New York in 2002, and didn't really find out about the festival until 2004.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's my 9th year myself. Yeah. So another veteran of the game. Yeah. All right. That's all. I want to thank you for your time.
Of course.
I appreciate it. I know it's late. No problem. And fans, that was Rufus Durand from Subway Cinema. Thanks.